Welcome back to another episode of Nui Tech People, where we've chosen the best bits from our first 10 episodes. You can find a dedicated page on our website for each of the episodes. Just search www.nuitechpeople.com.au. We share the full video, audio version, and show notes, providing resource material mentioned in the episode. We're also very active on social media, so make sure you follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to get all of our latest content. Hope you enjoy this episode. From episode one, Matthew Finch. What got you into technology in the beginning, like winding it right back?
Yeah, right. I think I've sort of always been interested in technology and tech, probably because I play a lot of video games as a kid, and my daughter plays a lot of video games now, so hopefully that's a good sign. But I think technology is always in a constant state of change, and I'm pretty excited about change and pretty excited about doing new things and thinking differently. So technology is pretty well aligned with that. I remember, what was I, probably year, I think I was in year 10 going to year 11 or something like that, and spoke with one of the advisors at the school. You could choose your electives, and I went in and I looked at all the electives, and there were three, I think you got to choose three electives if I can remember rightly, and there were three of them, three technology related electives, and I was like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I want to be in tech. I want to do tech. I'm really excited about it. Sat down with this advisor and said, I'm doing these three tech ones. I think it was like software design and information process and information technology or something like that. And she said, oh no, you can't do three tech ones. You know, like people don't do that. You know, you need to kind of broaden your horizons. You're in school, you need to try a few different things. And I said, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm passionate about. This is what I'm excited about. And she's like, oh, I'm greatly advising that you don't do this. And I guess I've always been a little bit rebellious. So I was like, oh, well, Mum and Dad, I'm doing this. This is what I want to do. And I know I'm excited about this. And it was probably the best thing I ever did because, yeah, jumped into those three subjects and shot the lights out. And fortunately for me, there was a lot of overlap between the three. So I only had to do sort of one set of study to get good grades across all three subjects. And maybe that's why she didn't want me to do it in the first place. But and it all worked out. And yeah, I think I've been doing tech sort of ever since. Fixed computers when I was a young kid for the lady down the street for $20 or something, you know. And here I am. So yeah, it's always what I've been excited about.
$20 back then would have been all right as well.
Oh, it was heaps. Got me like four trips to Macca's, I reckon.
From episode two, Joshua Leask. And what do you think of sort of some of the, I think we both agree that Newcastle's growing from a tech perspective. It's still not anywhere near one of the capital cities, but what do you think would be sort of some of the advantages of being in and around Newcastle from a tech professional perspective?
Well, before I get onto the tech benefits, I guess the lifestyle benefits is why we move back from Sydney to Newcastle. In Sydney, I lived 9 kilometres to work and it took me 50 minutes. Here I live 19 kilometres and it takes me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it's a huge difference. And, big, like nice leafy suburb. When we moved, and this was before the price boom in Sydney, and we could have bought a crappy two-bedroom unit in the eastern suburbs. Or now we've got like big size, like two-bedroom house in, you know, nice suburb, all the rest of it, the same money. And the salaries, like, they can be a bit lower, but it's certainly, makes up for it in terms of what you can get. And the lifestyle here, the beaches, the lake. I was out on the lake last weekend for Float Your Boat.
Yeah.
That was good. And just stuff like that. And Newcastle's a great place to live. But in terms of tech, it's interesting because we don't have as many big players. We have quite a few small players. But the opportunities, and the same with my wife-in-law, you get to be, like, I don't know how to put it nicely, you get to be a bigger fish in a smaller bowl.
Yeah.
In Sydney, you can easily get swallowed up. You can be a shit kicker for like 30 years and never go anywhere. Newcastle is a bit better in terms of like progress and having your career go forward. It seems a lot easier.
Mate, I completely agree. I think there's a big fish, small pond. But I also think for people probably like yourself who are prepared to sort of, you know, go to the meetups, and I know you just, you know, finished your MBA recently.
That's actually 10 years ago.
10 years ago?
I know. It seems like not recently. Yeah, I ran into someone from my MBA the other day and I couldn't believe it. It was, over 10 years ago now.
Yeah, right. Well, let's say somebody that's actually gone ahead and done their MBA, right? Yeah. Somebody that's actually going to invest in themselves and invest on sort of moving forward. You're obviously playing, side hustle. With Finacli as well. So, a guy that's actually looking at new technologies, looking at, progressing yourself, I think there's opportunities for guys like yourself that are, going to continue to sort of investing themselves in moving forward. Yeah. I think those opportunities probably present themselves in Newcastle quicker than you might get in Sydney.
And the other reason for that is networking. You get to know, most people, a lot of people around town, and it's not what you know, it's who you know a lot of the time. So that really helps in Newcastle. You just can't know everyone at the sort of head of all the companies in Sydney.
Okay.
In Newcastle, you can go to meet, if you're active with the council and, business chambers and whatnot, you can actually meet all the bigwigs from all the companies here and make connections.
I completely agree.
From episode 3, Jonathan Milgate.
There are differing opinions out there on university and the value of university for technology professionals in particular. I think there's, things have changed over time.
Yeah.
What remains the same is there are a lot of either hiring managers or HR managers looking out there, and the first thing they have got in their requirements is degree in computer science or something of the equivalent. Now, you've obviously done your degree.
Mm-hmm.
Probably two questions. How did you find that valuable or not? And two, what's your opinion on, is it a necessity?
That's a really tough question, actually. I don't think it's a cut and dry. I just mentioned being binary ones and zeros, but it's not anymore. Back when I did my degree, which is so many years ago, it was. If you didn't have that piece of paper, then you couldn't get the job. And that's essentially why I did it in the first place. But I've since gone back and done a master's degree, and that was more personal for me because I needed that as the goal setting technique that if I have this subject, it needs to be done by now and I need to study and make sure I get it done by then. So for me, the university degree was more about getting something done. I know I wanted to achieve this goal, and that's how I got to it. In terms of what you learn at university, I think it's much better to learn about how to do things and the history of things and the theory behind it, whereas the actual hands-on technical things, as we said, technology is transient. It will change. I learned Java when I was at uni. No one uses Java. Well, that's not true. People use Java, but I've never written a line of code in Java in the real world in my life, but I did 4 years of it at university.
Yeah.
But what I learned was how to write code and how to build systems. And that's what's really driven me to where I am today. I don't think it's a necessity. If you've got the knack for it, if you want to do it, if you've got passion for it and you can teach yourself how to do it, then go for it. You don't need university for that sort of thing, to an extent. But for us, as I mentioned, Ndidi's got quite a few PhD students, and that's about research. So we do a lot of research. A lot of our time and our budget goes towards research and development. How do we do new things and try out new things? And I think you've got to have a good background in physics and maths to be able to do that. I can't imagine anyone not going to university figuring out how to learn about physics and maths another way.
Completely agree.
Yeah, so I think it's a two-way street now. A lot of people a lot of people don't need to go to university anymore to get where they need to be, especially in software development. There's a lot of good resources out there. Code Academy, Card Academy, Khan Academy, Udemy. There's heaps of different resources out online to learn software development and design and interaction design and things like that you won't get at university anyway. And if you want to learn how to write particular language, you don't go to university. You do that online or you find a specific course about it.
Yeah, mate, there's a good chance whatever you're writing at university probably will not be the language of choice.
As I said, finish university, yeah, right. So I did 4 years of Java. Yeah. I've never written a line of Java in my life.
Agreed.
Outside of uni. Yeah.
Episode 4, David Williams.
A lot of tech professionals are in Newcastle. There's a lot more limited opportunity, and people might say there's limited sort of educational opportunities as well, but you've actually taken it upon yourself to travel internationally to conferences and things like that. Is there any advice you can provide to people how you got involved in doing that. Was that sort of self-initiated? Would you go search those out and go search out those conferences on your own back? What advice would you give to others to sort of further educational mindset internationally?
Yeah, well, that's a good and a hard question, I must confess. I don't know if I have a terrific answer. I think, you know, funding yourself to go overseas is difficult. I have to admit I had the fortunate privilege that I was sponsored to go to a number of these events. So in addition to, you know, what we talked about, to lecturing, to running user groups and so on, I also write a column for a publication called ITWire.com. So I've as well written for print and online for 30 years. And that's really given me some tremendous opportunities, that exposure. So I guess my case, you know, it's a bit trite, I guess, if I give an answer saying, well, you know, have an audience and write about it and people will send you somewhere. But I think, you know, I guess I would encourage people that if they can somehow find the opportunity to go to some of these conferences, it's a tremendous, you know, the insights and the exposure you get is just incredible, not only to specific technologies, but even to just the general trends and thinking. And I would even like to suggest that, you know, when you go to some of these events, you can see technologies that's emerging that, you know, isn't going to be in production for another couple of years. It's really an opportunity to learn what really is going to be the next sort of wave. But as to how people get there, I guess, you know, there's no real good, easy, simple answer, I hate to say, except, you know, if you can find somebody generous enough to sponsor you, that's awesome. But otherwise, you know, if you can make your own way there, I think there's definitely a lot of benefits in doing so.
Yeah. You mentioned you're lucky enough. I don't know if luck's the actual, you know, the actual answer there, because you did mention you've written for, you know, you've got two blogs running at the moment, and you've written how many publications?
Oh, you know what? I would count it in thousands. I couldn't even say. So I actually, when I was still back at high school in 1988, when I was in year 11, I had my first article ever published in the Australian Commodore Review, which now you would think about as a car magazine, but back then it was a Commodore 64, Commodore 128 magazine. Then through university, I sold some articles to American publications. In Newcastle, I wrote for the Newcastle Herald. They had a weekly Q&A column, some people might remember, for the Australian, for APC magazine. But since in the last 10 years, it's all been online only. But, you know, I would have to say thousands of articles in print and online over that time.
From episode 5, Emma Levine.
Let's go to your second networking. Yes. Probably a little... Oh, less coffee, more another beverage. 70-30. Tell us about that.
Yeah, 70-30 is 70% social and 30% business. Yep. And it is women in communication and marketing.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter if you're not directly in communication or marketing. It's more just a way to meet similar people. I found that I kept going to networking events and I wanted to know what people were into and they wanted to know what I did.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but I realized that the networking, my purpose for networking was very different to a lot of other people's. Yep. So I thought, I'll just start my own.
Yeah.
And it's also, Newcastle can be quite lonely if you move here from somewhere else. It can feel like everyone is very established and everyone's got their friends, and there's some people who grew up together, went to university together and are working together. And so if you're new here, and I've actually found there's a lot of women who've moved here from Sydney or Melbourne to be with a partner.
Yeah.
And if you've moved here, it can be really hard to find your people. And 70-30 is super relaxed. We meet for drinks about once a month. Sometimes it ends up being only every 2 months. Sometimes it's twice a month. It's just whenever we can all get our act together. We mostly exist as a Facebook group. So if you just want to look for 70-30 Newcastle.
We'll link that up in our show notes.
Yeah. Thank you. And that's where we mostly exist on Facebook. But we meet up and it's a chance to not feel like we have to impress anyone. We can just be who we are. And sometimes we're exhausted. So sometimes it'll be a Thursday afternoon and we meet up somewhere and some of us just go, I'm not talking any work today. No work. I don't care. I just want to know what everyone's up to on the weekend. And we all kind of get it. We all go, yeah, don't worry. I hear you. And it's a really nice supportive group.
There's a lot of value in meeting without an agenda, right?
Yeah.
And I think another part, the other key part you mentioned was sort of like finding out the person behind the job. So it's the same, this podcast, for example, it's about people in and around the technology space. But for me, it's more so the people behind the technology, as in technology will continue to be there and continue to grow at a fast pace. But technology just only as good as the people behind the technology. And those people either working well with other people is going to be where the technology either succeeds or doesn't, right? It's not the actual technology itself the vast majority of times. It's the people behind that. And that's what I'm super interested in. So, like, who are those people? What drives them? Why are some people more successful than others? Like, what are those little sort of things that are leading to people being successful?
Yeah. I absolutely agree that you're right. Technology will continue to exist and it will continue to roll, but the way, the direction that it goes is going to be so dependent on the people that are involved.
I completely agree. Completely agree.
From episode 6, Wayne Ingram.
Any advice that you just give to people outside, you know, not talking to an early version of yourself, but just anyone, let's say they're looking, they've got an interest in technology and they want to grow their career. Any advice you could give to other people?
Yeah, just have a go. Learn, be curious and try things out. You know, I think that's a common, you know, agile, those sorts of things have become quite popular these days, and one of their mantras is to fail fast. And I think doing that yourself is probably good advice as well. You know, not everything you're going to do is going to work. Not every job's going to work out. Especially when you're younger, you have that ability to take risks. You know, once you get family and kids and that sort of stuff, you become a bit more safe in that regard with your career. But when you've got no dependents and you've got, you know, you can go work overseas for 12 months, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, the skills and the life experiences you'll pick up would be excellent. So
agreed. Mate, let's go to Newcastle specific for a sec.
Yeah.
Mate, you've obviously been around Newcastle for a while. You've done a few of the bigger organizations around town. You've done Hunter Water, NIB, and Mind Super.
Yeah.
Mate, what's your opinion on the changing state of the technology scene in Newcastle?
I certainly think that startup sort of stuff is a lot bigger now. That sort of didn't exist when I first came up here. And I think there's very much two ends of the spectrum now. You've got your traditional enterprises that have existed here for a number of years and probably quite traditional in the way they operate. And then you have the other end of the spectrum. You have the startups that are very agile, using a lot of new technologies and those sorts of things. So I think that's probably the biggest difference is that pick up. And it's taking some time, but slowly getting there where some of those traditional businesses are moving more into that center space where they're sort of letting go of some of the traditional stuff and taking on board some of the newer technologies and new ways of doing things. But that's probably the biggest change I've seen is that startup mentality in Newcastle.
Yeah, and it's not even the small startups doing it themselves as much as you said. It's probably the larger organizations having more of a startup mentality, and whether it be even a startup mentality or just more of an agile approach. And there's obviously been a significant rise in agile over the past few years, but I think there is definite move towards that sort of fail fast, move quicker type approach, which definitely wasn't there.
And I think, and it's just general and across the board, but that move from technology being, you know, the cost center to the enabler.
Yeah,
I think there's that general recognition now that no matter what you do in business, it involves some form of technology. So you've got to have the capability to move quickly. If the business wants to do something, they want to acquire another company or divest or whatever it is they want to do, they need to have the capabilities and skills in-house to do something, and it may not be expected. It's, I guess, back to that being able to morph into what you need really quickly, having the ability to learn things and take on things quickly instead of this traditional
I'm an exchange admin. I've got 20 years experience as an exchange admin. Well, exchange has gone to 365 now, so that skill's gone. If that's what your bread and butter is,
yeah,
and you're not don't have the ability to adapt quickly, then you're not going to have a good, you know,
track record. Yeah, you're before prospects so, don't like us.
So I think businesses, I think, are acknowledging the fact that they need to have those sorts of people in their technology team to be able to enact what the business decided to do next.
I agree.
From episode 7, Anthony Molinia.
I think it'd be extremely refreshing for a lot of people to actually hear somebody like yourselves help driving a project that might be blockchain related or other you know, VR, AR projects, but just to hear that the university is actually thinking about these things and trying to disrupt themselves, so to speak.
Yeah, well, look, the university, I mean, we're a regional campus and being a regional campus and not part of a large metropolitan city, we have the opportunity to be a little bit more flexible, believe it or not. So, you know, we need to leverage off of those advantages in terms of being able to be flexible and being able to be a little bit innovative, utilizing the space we have available to us, really operate as a living lab and or a microcosm of a city and testing it and using the university to be tested that way to support the regional communities and also then to be translated into a broader metropolitan city.
I completely agree. Mate, on the technology, you may have mentioned before, an innovation team. I think 99% of organizations don't have innovation teams or dedicated innovation teams. They're looking at, you know, different variations of ways to innovate from within. I think the fact that you actually made mention the university has that internally here is a massive advantage. You want to give a quick overview to the people that might not know about that, some of the projects that they might be working on?
Yeah, so look, the innovation team's a small team and it's purposefully a small team. And it's been very fruitful. I mean, they've done a lot of projects in a short period of time. Basically, the projects that I mentioned previously, augmented reality, virtual reality, to demonstrate how effective immersive technology can be in the learning space, particularly for both those that require a safe environment to learn in, and simulation environments are often very expensive, like physical simulation environments, and or to deliver a level of equity. So sometimes, you know, students have to work in order to pay to go to university and can't come to all the tutorials or to the lab work that they have at the university. To give them a virtual reality kit and access to that software provides a level of equity for those students that are unable to attend all the courses or all the labs on the university. So that's one aspect. They've also spent some time in the artificial intelligence space, you know, developing what we see as, you know, almost like a student assistant, which is not uncommon in the university space. And they've started to work in the blockchain. They're a very small team. There's 5 or 6 of them in the team, but it's designed to be a collaborative unit. So whilst there's 5 or 6 in the team, their specialties are in user experience, human-centered design, design thinking, as well as in a broad range of technology stacks, and then engaging and collaborating with people from the school to help define the problem and or opportunity, and then with external parties to help provide augmented resources to drive the outcomes. Their projects last anywhere between 12 and 16 weeks from zero to hero, from concept to delivery. And, you know, they've, you know, in the space of 18 months gotten through 14 projects. So they're very effective in that space. However, I think we need to turn the dial up in that space and make innovation a bias as opposed to a team on its own right. So I have a bias to innovation, I have a bias to action. So we're actually looking to bring innovation into all aspects of our business lines, if you will, and try and drive innovation throughout all the teams, not just in you know, one or two areas.
From episode 8, Alex Girard.
And if we take it all the way back, mate, what got you into, you know, technology, what got you into the development space in general? Like, how did this come about for you?
I think the more we go back in time, the more approximate the answer will be, but I will try my best. I would say I always had a guinin. How do you say that? I will say that again. A genuine. I always had a genuine interest into science.
Yeah.
Just because it was a way for me to explain what was going on around me. And also, I always hated doing more than two or three times the same thing. So I wanted to automate things as much as I can, or at least doing one travel instead of three, you know, to clean the dishes or whatever.
Yeah.
So effectively, I was into... I was attracted by mathematical university first. So I studied math for a couple of years, and then I moved into computer science just because I didn't see what would lead me, the math, just the pure math aspect of that. And into computer science, I could actually satisfy this need of automating a lot of things. So a lot of the tasks we do out there and we feel like we are efficient because we use an Excel spreadsheet. It's actually probably just 10% of what is possible to do nowadays.
Yeah. And that's nice. Hey, you're not the first person I've interviewed that says, you know, there's a want or a desire to sort of start to automate something and not repeat a task over and over. And that's being a driving influence in getting into technology and building things. I think you're definitely not alone there.
From episode 9, Austin Turner.
Productivity, Len, you've just opened the door.
Mm.
Outside of that, is there any other, you've mentioned three tools that are just there. Anything else you use from a productivity perspective?
I think my approach to productivity very strongly at work is everything is open by default. So the old model of, for a while, computers seem to lend us to everyone having their private store of files and information. And so you would have to go to the person who had the information to get it and things. That should be long dead by now. If you're using email for most of your communication, you're just having point-to-point conversations. There's no transparency. And other people can't jump in there and add, you know, valuable insights, etc. So as long as you default to everything being open, maybe there's a few files, maybe it's some of your HR or some of your finance stuff or whatever, that's your small bit of private stuff and you might just share that with your manager. Everything else I do, Confluence, Slack, just make it open. It's all there. I went on holiday for a month recently and no one bothered me. I think that I responded to one email about an audit for some information that was, you know, more of that confidentials type stuff.
Yeah.
Everything else, just flows because everything's open, everything's there, it can be picked up, someone can be away for a day and you just carry on with the work.
Yeah.
I think that's, once again, different approach to a lot of people, I think. I don't think that's the default position for most people or most companies.
I think it's very risky to take any other approach because you're basically siloing things and you're siloing information. And in that case, like, do I really think that keeping information to myself is going to make me more valuable? I don't think so. I think it's going to take a lot more of my time to retrieve it and give it to people all the time. So I can be a lot more valuable if I'm not serving 100 requests a day for, like, information that should just be open and public within the organization.
From episode 10, Jess Vandenbroggen.
How do we encourage more females to get into technology, do you think?
This is a really interesting point for me. I guess a part of it does start in that school level, at that school level. You know, technology isn't just programming, being sysadmin, and all that type of thing, and networks, like connecting networks.
Yeah.
It's not all about that. There is a different side. And so, maybe not just for women, but for all kids to understand what is available in the digital space for them to work on. What is in technology? What does technology mean? You know, it's so diverse now. Like the building of a website is many things other than what we were taught initially about IT processes and things like that. It's not all about understanding the zeros and ones, which someone might find really boring.
Yeah.
So, how do you kind of get people into the school saying, hey, these are different career paths. It's no longer just a dentist or a fireman or a policeman or insert generic businesswoman here, you know, like one day I'm going to work in business, you know, that kind of thing is no longer how jobs work.
I know, I completely agree.
So, yeah, how do we get that happening at a school level? I think in women in tech space is and has grown a lot, especially over the past 5 years. I keep referencing the past 5 years, but it has grown a lot. There are groups dedicated, women in product, women in technology, dev women, you know, all this kind of thing. The support is there, and women are really firing up because they've got that support and are able to bring their ideas to the table. I think I didn't go, but with the DevOps Day that was recent, I think there was some there was a lot of women talkers at that event, women speakers at that event, and that's just a really good reflection that people care about bringing women on board now, and there is support for that, and women can do it and are seen to be just the same as men in this space. So I think that's kind of a good direction to head for people who, oh, what am I going to do? I kind of really like working in technology, but am I going to be successful? Oh, there is all these groups available that I could be a part of. I think that also helps support that.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a growing support for it. Yeah, I think it's been encouraged better and better, which is great.
Yeah.
And I think your other point there about, you know, what is technology? Technology is not just ones and zeros. You don't have to be, you know, sitting in a dark corner just banging away on a keyboard.
And that might be your thing. Yeah. And that's okay too, right? Correct. So we've got, you know, heaps of DevOps type people and administrators at NIB, and, you know, that's just their jam. That's what they're into. But
that's not everyone.
Yeah, that's not everything. That's not all what technology is about.
I completely agree. I think some people are brilliant at that. Some people enjoy that, and that's their jam. And then there's other bits where you said technology, where does the line for technology stop, right? Like technology and business, there's so much overlap now. And you don't have to be somebody that, you know, wants to get into the nitty-gritties of, you know, back-end infrastructure or, you know, encoding.
Yeah.
There's that. There's a lot to be done within the greater realm of technology in business that, there's more and more opportunities that, you know, you could lend your skills to. You don't have to be that super, super technical person by name.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you're in the Newcastle tech scene or relocating to Newcastle, be sure to check out our website, newitechpeople.com.au. We share local tech events happening each month, jobs in the area, podcast episodes, and more. We'll have a new episode coming to you each fortnight, so stay tuned. Thanks again for listening.